Radiophrenia. The light at the end of the dial.
Welcome to Radiophrenia The Ducks, a program presenting selections from the Radiophrenia archives. These works were originally aired during our second season of broadcasts between August and September 2016. In the second half of the program, you'll hear Ben Knight and Tom White with a Hörspiel exploring the potential of political listening within professional acts of caring. But first, How to Unpack a Whale by Anna Friz. The diurnal anxiety of constant travel transforms dream logic into dream logistics. Vast apartments filled with mutated memories require urgent nighttime packing and transport via all means of motor, machine, or mammal. Absurd dimensional incompatibilities produce carry-on bags which contain whole items of furniture. This is a radiophonic meditation on the containment and escape of material stuff, moved by land, sea, and night air, embedded in complex, half-imagined wireless communication channels and signal relays.
Surface of the earth and observe the goings-on of humankind below. You might notice that much of our activity involves moving things from one place to another. People move as well, but we're carried by the comfort of our things. And that movement, that placement of things, requires planning and organization, networks, certainly economies, and these are all accompanied by an unconscious attention, perhaps obsession, the symptom of which is the packing dream.
American 1586, contact Toronto Center 125.77, good day.
2577, American 1586.
Flagship 2965, reduced speed to 250.
250, 2965.
2965, traffic's 12 o'clock, about 7 miles. Is a heavy Airbus just about to turn westbound at flight level 230. That's going to be the traffic you're following to Spica.
Oh, okay, yeah, I got him.
2965, roger. Verify the assigned altitude flight level 240, please.
Yeah, we're stopping at 240, 2965, and doing 250 knots now.
Selection 2965, contact Cleveland Center 132.2.
I'm in an airport security lineup, and when it's my turn, I load my bags onto the metal table and begin to surgically remove each item. But as I do, I realize that there's much more stuff in this bag than meets the eye, including a farmhouse-style wooden bookcase which has unfolded from my bag somehow and now fills the entire table in front of the security scanner. I turn to the friend that I'm traveling with, and I say, "How did we fit this into the car on the way to the airport?" Later in the dream, I see the same bookcase sitting on the sidewalk in front of a house. And this time I say to myself, I'm not picking that up.
Aircan 1118, descend
6,000. United 1108, Toronto on the way to flight level 250. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Tango flight 274, ready to go down.
Flight 274, maintain flight level 240.
Aircan 1118, there's no restrictions. Descend to 3,000 for an 8-mile final.
There's no restrictions. 3 mile, 3,000. Aircan 1118.
Aircan 1183,
flight level 250. Canada 70, turn right 330. Heading 330.
Skywatch 4020, maintain flight level 320.
Victor Juliet Tango, 862 Delta, turn right on Gulf, cross runway 4 left, right turn on Zulu. Argentina 1301, Emmy Kennedy ground, runway 3 on left, hold, move up to and hold short of Alpha. Argentina 1301, heavy, follow Etihad, hold short of Foxtrot for runway 31 left.
Sorry, Alpha. I'm 0758, hold request, pull line 23.
I've got 858, hold hotel, hold short, Quebec.
Hold third, Quebec, here, Kennedy 58.
Tractor 246, Alpha Golf, April 2227.
Shed 535, climb to 7,000, radar identified.
7,000, report shed 535.
And at 6980, U.S. departure.
United 541, 5387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3387, 3
dreamt that I was pulling a blue hard case suitcase along the sidewalk until the sidewalk ended in the beach. And there I pulled it through the sand and the pebbles until I reached the high tide zone. But when I looked out, I realized that the ocean was simply gone. It had pulled away from the shore more like a lip pulled off of teeth into a grimace. The beach was more like a moraine at the edge of a glacier field. I pulled the blue suitcase until it was stuck in the sand. When I opened it, the books and notebooks and shampoo bottles and a teapot and tools which were all thrown together fell out onto the sand. I looked out to the horizon again, remembering that when the ocean has pulled away from the shore to this degree, it means that a tsunami is coming. And sure enough, I could see the wave in the distance, a huge wall that was stories high, a skyscraper of water. I found myself at the bottom of a canyon of vertical water, my suitcase long buried in the sand. Side of an enormous cliff face the size of a mountain. The water washed up almost to the top. The surface of this churning water was green with seaweed, completely covered and thick. And after a while, humpback whales began spy hopping. The whales were massive, the size of apartment buildings, their heads green with seaweed. And after a while, I realized that one of them was not a whale at all, but in fact a freighter that had upended and was sinking. All the containers from the ship had come loose and were washing up and smacking into the shore. And in that strange dream logic, all those containers became the size of Lego blocks, which I could have picked up in my hand and stored in my suitcase if it had not drowned. In the dream, we're around the corner in the parking lot of the supermarket, the side where no one usually parks, and it's quite dark. I'm with a family member, maybe a younger version of my brother, and he's leaving, it feels like, maybe forever. I'm crying inconsolably, saying, I'm sorry for everything. I wish you weren't leaving. I wish that I could go. The car, which is more like a cargo taxi, has the seats removed and sitting next to it. And there's wood piled near a fence, and a lot of suitcases and bags, which actually look quite a bit like mine. Am I being left, or am I leaving? Before the awkward Tetris can begin to pack it up, someone shows up with a squirt gun and says, I can take care of the seats and the lumber. Then they take aim and spray water all over the seats and the wood until everything dissolves. Later, I dream that I'm on a bus or on a train, coming home from a long trip. I get off a little early in order to check the map and make sure I know where I am. But as I'm doing so, the bus leaves with all my baggage on board. And I realize that I've lost my passport and my wallet. All of my material identity is gone. And at first I panic. And then I just feel abandoned. Nothing more to hold on to, and no longer held in the comfort of my things.
that was How to Unpack a Whale by Anna Fliss, a Radiophrenia commission funded by Creative Scotland. And now on Radiophrenia the Ducks, I've Had It Up to Here with Fish and Chips by Ben Knight and Tom White. This is a Hörspiel exploring the potential of political listening within professional acts of caring, drawing on Ben Knight's experience as a social worker and asylum support volunteer, and composed of interviews with care workers of all kinds, this voice play focuses on what we hear in our caring encounters.
More often than not, we're hearing our own voices. Whether that's something we identify in somebody else, or our own preconceptions or concerns about those encounters. I think on some level we think we're hearing what the other person is saying, but I think it goes deeper than that. 90% of your communication is non-verbal. I think it's, you know, you can't get away from the fact that you're a person interacting with another person. It's not like you're there, a computer just gathering information and weighing it up. I think more often than not, we're hearing our own worries about what came before and what's coming next.
In
this kind of work,
anyway.
I hate to laugh. It was serious.
I hate to laugh.
But I did.
It was serious.
It wasn't malicious laughter.
But
it first
started working. But I did.
It's hard to describe.
It wasn't malicious laughter. It's hard to describe. You know. The tone in which she said it.
The actions of her hands. And the abruptness of her outburst.
And the abruptness of her outburst.
She's not particularly religious. She follows it when she feels like it.
Not.
Or when she's visited her parents, which might be every few weeks.
It when she feels like it.
When I first started
when
working there,
parents
when
have visited, which might be every few weeks.
Frozen fish and chips. It was a comical scene. It was every serious. Night, parents.
You say paid pretense. But there's an unpaid pretense.
When I first started working there, a usual support worker said that she always ate frozen fish and chips for her tea. Every night, same box, same brand. Young's her support workers never questioned it, and she didn't say any different. She was always nice and polite. That's why she was so well liked by the staff. But when I asked her if she liked fish and chips, she said, I've had it up to here with fish and chips. It was a comical scene. I hate to laugh. It was serious.
You know she behaves differently. Can we leave it there?
Can I?
He's all right. It's okay. He's still waiting his job. Crash. Talking about the Warriors film and shit like that. Then that's it. I'm gone. Off doing something else and he'll be thinking.
You say paid pretense, but there's an unpaid pretense that goes on at work when service users behave differently. They have these characters depending on who they're working with. So there's this performing labor that they're doing for free with different members of staff. This one person was struggling with handovers between one member of staff and another. You could see her being like, hey, wait, come on, I'm in this character and I need to be in another character. You know she behaves differently. Can we leave it there?
It's like what we were talking about before.
I can't remember what it was.
A paid pretense.
You're a how passing she was sad.
A grey area.
He knew that cats could in a field of emotional
intelligence, I think. Where your ability to care
but
for someone
the wheels were in motion, it was deemed
unprofessional role, that this wasn't your and you do get into these blurred areas.
If it had happened outside a social support worker setting, a friendship would have evolved.
Telling them to move furniture that they had for years lived.
Where you draw the line.
For years,
they don't just
smack them.
There was a problem involving care staff in a residential home. There were two. I don't want to say over-friendly,
but the way they behaved
would have been okay had they been friends with this person and known her.
The
stuff, but no. Team
kicked up a fuss. The sometimes occupational therapist kicked up a fuss.
You're professional.
That's the way it is.
You've got ways doing things a certain way. I can't remember what it was specifically now. They were just being overly jokey about something. God. I don't
want to
say
you said it was florid trauma, and your response to it was calm, not unemotional. It almost seemed mundane. You had a manic 2 weeks, and no one had time to speak to her. But when you managed to sit with her and have a cup of tea, she wanted to hold your hand. She wanted to talk, but it was emotional for you too. You said that you wished you could spend more time with her, but
do you disagree?
It wasn't
for me.
Always.
My parents were living there.
It's possible.
I'd want that bantery relationship. And you can
when panic starts
have
to set in,
that
you go on your gut feeling.
Bantery relationship. I think sometimes the service
there are definitely
users
people
understand
who are away from the standard
know
procedures. I'm
there's
of one
a limit to that
relationship.
He's alright. He's okay.
I don't know if our job contradicts itself.
He's alright.
It's a relationship.
He's okay.
Job
he's wearing his Johnny Cash t-shirt, you know, talking about the Warriors film and shit like that. But then that's it. I'm gone. Off doing something else, and he'll be like, thinking, where's he gone? Where's he gone? He's alright, he's okay, where's he going? Because he did like me, and it's hard for him not being big-headed. But I actually took an interest in his life. It's really hard, it's like what you were talking before. It's a pain pretense. If you want to call it that, area. He's alright, he's okay.
When you confront
you're working in a field of emotional intelligence, I think, where your ability to care for someone and listen to someone is part of your professional role, and you do get into these blurred areas. If it had happened outside a social support worker setting, a friendship would evolve, but there are more specific types of boundary where you draw the line. I can't remember the details. There was a problem involving care staff in a residential home. home that were too, I don't want to say, overly friendly, but the way they behave would have been okay had they been friends with this person and known her and stuff. But no, you're residential staff, you're professional, you've got ways doing things a certain way. I can't remember specifically now, I can't remember the details, I can't remember the details. They were just being overly jokey about something that I don't want to say, bantering. I hate the word banter. The workers involved, they were saying in this meeting, we've got a close relationship with all our people. And the argument was that this wasn't your grandparents' relatives. You are a professional and you cannot have these sort of bantery relationships. It's not appropriate. And I can understand if you've got a good relationship with someone. I can see why it's hard. You disagree? Service users understand, no, there's a limit to that relationship. I don't know if our job contradicts itself. It's a relationship-based job, and sometimes you have to get quite close to make that relationship work. You've got to give a bit of yourself over. You've got to cross that line from time to time. You have to negotiate. You've got to give a little bit of yourself over. You've got to cross that line from time to time. You have to negotiate. Have to negotiate. You've got to cross that line from time to time. I think it's quite patronizing for the local authority and the care homes to set those boundaries. You need to give a little bit of yourself over. You negotiate. Personally, I think that this is an empathetic job. Trying to see or think or feel as someone else might. It would be an interesting thing to chart over time. I don't know how you would do it. Something as ephemeral as the atmosphere. But it does definitely sometimes change your responses to a situation. It feels like you're teetering on the edge, an internalized voice. You've got to deal with it. You've got to deal with it. You've got to deal with it louder still. And you have to respond to someone's carer or parents or brother. And one of them is a social worker, a real wise guy. The telephone rings. And again, and again, and again. It's quite tense, but the moment now, there's nothing unsafe. Then you remember that you're understaffed. What if someone tried to self-harm and you couldn't respond? It hasn't happened yet, but it's on your mind, creating a sense of trepidation. The phone rings again. It's an internal number. And again, same number they'll call back. And again, same number they'll call back. When panic sets in, it starts to set in and you go on your gut feeling.
You know, the tone in which she said it, the actions of her hands and the abruptness of her outburst. She's not particularly religious. She follows it when she feels like it or when she's visited her parents, which might be every few weeks. When I first started working there, her usual support workers said that she always ate frozen fish and chips for her tea.
There are definitely people who are further away from the standard procedures.
The support workers never questioned
it. I'm thinking of one colleague who's known as being a bit of a maverick.
That's why she was so well liked by the staff.
He's experienced.
But when I asked her if she liked fish and chips, she said,
"Senior status
means that
he can't get away with some of his actions without reprimand. You know that he's not making any decisions flippantly. Even though it might seem that way, his flippancy is serious. If you were someone who didn't know, you'd be like, what's he doing? He's not afraid of the consultant. They argue and they've fallen out over their approaches. That person is on red alert and they're not allowed to leave the hospital and you took them to Alton Towers and his reasoning will be they're miserable. Their friends were going and I think they need to get out of here for a day. He's definitely at one end of the spectrum. He improvises with the guidelines, takes the person on the day.
I'm gone, off doing something else. And he'll be thinking,
there are others who get in a flap, don't
he did like me and
like to deviate.
Not being big-headed, but I actually took an interest in his life. It's really hard. It's like what we were talking about before. It's a paid pretense, if you want to call it that.
Previously, I would have
you're working in a field of emotional intelligence,
suspicious of.
Pretense, where your ability to care for someone and listen to someone is part of your professional role.
Using it as a criticism, but our conversations have changed my mind.
If it happened outside
you
social support,
need it in music or art, or otherwise you might end up with a racist. I don't think of pretentiousness as something to avoid. When I think of it in my job, I think of my reactions in the moment when you're confronting a problem. And that's this voice in your head. It's saying there's a procedure to follow here, but it doesn't quite sit right with you, and you need to improvise, establish new routes. This is really hard, and you need experience. But there are moments that are forums to discuss things with a wider team outside the nursing staff, psychologists, consultants. And I remember mentioning this to you earlier. I got to go in and be party to how lots of people's care would be for the next 2 weeks. And you know, I actually felt quite at home arguing the task with the consultant. I don't mind doing it. Actually, I think she respects it when you come up against her. But I have the right background for her. She's an old school consultant. We kinda had it out yesterday, not in a horrible way. Actually, she persuaded me that she was right on this issue, and I was like, okay, but yeah, I'm not sure that all the staff necessarily do that. The opinion of the nursing staff doesn't get brought out in this forum. Nursing assistants don't feel like they can express themselves, not in this environment. The other thing is that the consultant can be very rude to you, will just shut you down, and can be extremely patronizing and won't listen. I've seen her do it to other people. Now, it sounds like I'm blowing my own trumpet, but you need to be articulate and extremely sure of what you're saying, and then she'll listen to you. The thing is, nursing assistants have never been invited to those meetings, and a few of us have questioned this. They have great ideas and lots of experience, but they can't get heard, and you have to take these. I did this yesterday. I got an idea past the consultant, congratulated me, and I said that it came from one of the assistants. She praised me, but she would never ask them. She's an old school consultant.
Of your communication is unworthy. I think it's, you know, you can't get away from the fact that you're a person interacting with another person. It's not like you're there, a computer just gathering information and weighing it up. I think more often than not we're hearing our own worries about what came before and what's coming next. In this kind of work, anyway.
She said it was a short term contract.
But I did.
Her
it wasn't malicious like that. It was hard
to persuade him,
you know,
to move.
The tone in which she said it, the actions
she
of her hands and the abruptness.
Knew
of her
he was happy
she
in
was
this part
really
of the city.
Religion.
Had lived there for 35 years. Moving would be too distressing for someone with dementia.
She had always ate frozen fish and chips for her tea.
She was moving herself next week. A right on colleague said that she would take the case on when she left, make sure he stayed in the area.
When I asked her if she liked fish and chips, she said, "I've had it up to here with fish and chips."
On Friday, she received a card signed by most of the team.
You say a paid pretense, but there's no paid pretense that goes on at work. When service
floating
users behave differently,
in a cloudless
they have these characters depending on
sky.
Who they're working with. So this is performing labour that they're doing for free with different members of staff. This one person was struggling with handovers between one member of staff to another.
He did
you could see
self
harm,
but
like,
it wasn't
wait,
serious.
I'm in this fucking character and I need to be in another fucking character.
He didn't
you know, she
like
behaves
to talk
differently.
On the phone, so
there?
You agree to meet
he's
in
right,
the park
he's
near
okay.
your
he's
office.
Still wearing his Johnny Cash
the response
you know,
of your colleagues was perplexed.
Like
how did you know if you'd be safe or what he might do.
he's hurt him because so this he did like me and it was hard for him.
In the park, he talked about how he always had to listen to other people's opinions of him getting messages sent to his phone. You shared a bag of crisps. He said that he might want to try out a few more activities. Did he like yoga? No. Did he like creative writing? Yes. Then he went off, had his KFC, and was absolutely buzzing.
You've been listening to I've Had It Up To Here With Fish and Chips by Ben Knight and Tom White, recorded live in the Radiophthenia studio on 10 September 2016. Radiophthenia is supported by Creative Scotland. For more details on our activities, visit our website at www.radiophthenia.scot.
Radiophthenia.